Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands. Welcome to this new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. Today, we're going to talk more about sales than marketing. And I'm delighted to have Scott Ingram on the show today. Welcome, Scott.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Scott, you're for people that don't know you, you're the host of the Sales Success Stories and also the podcast Daily Sales Tips. You wrote a couple of books. You know, you're also an organizer of the Sales Success Summit, which is taking place in October. You had a virtual one last year, so hopefully we'll have a blended one or a live one this year. Could you elaborate a little on your background?
Yeah, happy to. And I think very appropriate for your podcast audience. I have also been in marketing technology sales for the last 10 years. So I joined Eloqua in 2011. And so rode that rocket ship through their IPO and then subsequent acquisition by Oracle. And for the last 5 years during the day, so you mentioned all of the sales podcasts and the summits and the books, that's all side hustle fun. During the day, I work for a professional services firm that works predominantly around the Oracle Marketing Cloud with enterprise scale clients. So I cross over a lot. My world during the day is all about marketing technology and marketing automation. And then I spend my evenings talking to some of the very best sales professionals in the world. And so it's fun to talk with you about kind of this intersection of where the best in sales meets the best in marketing and marketing technology and some of the insights that we might be able to bring to both of those things.
Absolutely, because as Scott Brinker, the other Scott here, said, as the let's say godfather of MarTech, we had him on the podcast a while ago. But you know, he mentions like sales tech is the new MarTech. There's a big fuss around sales technology at the moment. It's almost like say merging into marketing technology. So we can share a lot here. So this is going to be an interesting interview. Absolutely. So you joined Eloqua before it actually got acquired by Oracle, right?
Correct.
Okay. So what changed when Oracle took it over?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, a lot of things changed. I mean, the biggest change for me personally was, you know, I went from working for a super nimble, incredible culture and organization with about 300 people. And one day I woke up and I had 130,000 global colleagues. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is just going from a startup environment to a massive enterprise environment. And then just that process of being brought into the Oracle ecosystem. And then things continued to really go from there, right? Oracle continued to make acquisitions and built a much more full-featured Oracle Marketing Cloud and that kind of stack. So it's really interesting to work in that type of an environment. I joined Relationship One. They were actually my favorite partner when I was working in the Eloqua space. And I joke that this is the closest I can be to Eloqua without having to work for Oracle, because I work better in a much more dynamic, nimble space. Even though my clients are predominantly large enterprises, I like selling to them. I like working with them. I don't like working for them.
Mm-hmm. And I can fully understand that because, you know, Oracle, as you said, there's like 130,000 people working for that company. If you're used to working for a nimble and smaller company, that's absolutely, I would say the way to go, and to stay with that smaller company, because probably a lot of people wouldn't, you know, there's like a kind of atmosphere or a kind of dynamic you'll have to fit into when you're working for a company like Oracle. And a lot of people do, of course. So I would say, you know, that's different. But let's talk marketing automation, sales process. If you're looking at marketing automation, and a lot of people refer to it, let's say, as the right message to the right people at the right time. Is that something that you recognize? Is that something that you also spend time on talking to your customers?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would maybe add to that in the right channel, right? So mm-hmm. it's not just right message, right time, but we all have different communication preferences. So it's really bringing all of those things together and taking more of an omni-channel type of approach is the types of things that we're frequently working with our clients on.
The thing that I would like to talk about today, specifically within that marketing automation space, where it also blends into the sales space, is the qualifying aspect of the sales cycle, which is an interesting part. It's within marketing automation, you're using stuff like lead scoring, nurturing leads, warming up leads. You're putting them you're making them marketing qualified leads, sales qualified leads, sales ready, all these things we should talk about. But first of all, for me, it would be important to see if we're looking at the sales cycle. And as a marketer, we deliver a lead to a salesperson. It could be an SDR or a BDR, whatever. And we deliver them a sales qualified lead. First thing for them would be to reach out. And their qualification process basically starts there. They get handed over info, et cetera. They reach out to those prospects. A big thing that we have seen there is that qualification is not done properly at that stage because, you know, we spend a lot of time as salespeople on the wrong leads. So would you agree there that we spend too much time on leads that are not worth it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just got off a conversation with a client. We were talking about exactly that. They're just passing way too many leads to their sales team. You know, their current qualification is if they attended a webinar, that's a lead. We want an SDR to call them. Mm-hmm. And that is horrible for everybody. It's no good for sales. You're wasting a lot of cycles and a lot of human capital in that approach. And you're probably frustrating your prospects, right? So, you mm-hmm. know, here's, and I think it's that those types of processes that have made all of this so much harder because everybody is like, I don't want to, it's not worth it for me to give you my email address and my phone number to attend this webinar if you're going to call me every time. So I'm not going to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's say I'm an SDR and I get the loads of leads handed over from my marketing department. They hand me over a list or maybe even better, you know, I log into my Salesforce account in the morning. New leads are added automatically from within Eloqua or Marketo or HubSpot, you know, whatever. Those leads get sourced automatically into Salesforce, ready to follow up. How do I approach that as an SDR, you know, and how will I be able to say no to the misfits in an early stage?
Yeah. So this is such a holistic problem and it's not a marketing problem. It's not a sales problem. It's everybody's problem. It's a revenue team problem. I think the first thing is one, that approach is just generally flawed. Mm-hmm. For the reasons I stated, right? It's you're wasting cycles and you're kind of turning off the experience. I think it kind of starts on the lead scoring level and the way that we're qualifying people with the data that we already have. So do they fit in the sweet spot for our clients? Are they the right persona? Do they work inside the type of organization that tends to be a really good fit for us? And I think we would all be served better if we were more picky and more specific and more exact about what each of those things were and just be more picky about it. Because mm-hmm. what you're suggesting is, well, we're sending people to the SDR team who now the SDR team is going to have to turn around and tell them no, essentially. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's very likely that they're going to be no based on what we know out of the gate, how about we don't call them? And not have that uncomfortable, awkward situation that I think we don't think about enough about the goodwill that mm-hmm. that we're building in the marketplace. You're not building goodwill. You're building ill will if you're calling people, frustrating them, irritating them, and then telling them no because they're not qualified. So I think we first get a lot more strict on our lead scoring and lead qualification criteria on the marketing side before we even pass it to sales. On the sales side, I think the challenge that we've had for a long time is, well, now we start with qualification, right? Now I want to bant them and figure out, like, do they have the budget, the authority, the need, the timing? That's an awful place to start a conversation. Like, we're just getting to know each other. We're trying to figure out if there's a fit here. The last thing I want, I think we need to be way more empathetic in our process and put ourselves in the shoes of the clients. So I'm kind of interested. This might be something that could fit for us. So let me reach out to this organization. Let me try and have a conversation. The last thing I want to do is be put in a dark room with a bright light on my face and interrogated about whether or not I'm the decision maker, whether or not I have budget allocated to this project, whether or not I'm ready to go now. Instead, I think we need to be much more focused on, let's just have a conversation. Can we humanize this process and seek to understand, where are you at? What prompted you to reach out? Or maybe we're in an education phase and this is more of an outbound type of opportunity, in which case it's, you know, let me give you just a little bit of an overview. Does that sound like something, or, you know, here's the challenges that we're typically solving for. Are those things that you're facing? And doing the qualification through a much more human conversational type of process and not be so worried about, I think BANT is a pretty horrible experience to subject people to. So if you do that right, it's less cycles, it's more qualified cycles. We're now having good, productive conversations and then can determine whether it's the right fit or not. And then to really kind of answer your question more directly, now, when you're talking through that, I think it makes sense to just be direct. And when somebody doesn't fit the typical criteria, you just kind of say that. Say, hey, look, most of our clients, they look like this. You don't really seem to look like that. I'm not sure that we'd be the right fit. And maybe they really push back on that. And maybe they're really, really interested. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Maybe it does still make sense to pursue that relationship. But I have a lot of conversations like that, and mm-hmm. and the prospects love it. They're like, you know what? I so appreciate that you let me know that this just isn't the right thing. You know, I had this just happened to me last week, and it was I can't believe I had to do this because I was talking to Slack. Like, here's just a giant organization, great mm-hmm. opportunity, very sophisticated, and right out of the gate, what they are asking for, I was like, guys, I'm sorry, we're just not going to be able to serve you in the way that we like to take care of our clients, because what you're looking for just isn't quite the right fit. I'm sorry. And they loved that. And so, again, I'm able to build goodwill. It would have been horrible had we tried to pursue it anyway. It just would have been bad business. They wouldn't have had a good experience. We would have had a client that churned after a few months. That's just bad across the board. So I think we need to be more mindful of the lifetime value of the customer, the relationship that we're building, the conversations that we're having, the goodwill that we're building in the broader marketplace.
I fully agree there, Scott. You know, and I'm fully with you. And I think this is some great advice to SDRs, salespeople reaching out to new prospects. On the other hand, however, you know, we have sales managers pushing for a bigger pipeline. We have a lot of salespeople have read the books that Mike Weinberg wrote, for example, or Jeff Blount, and they talk about, you know, inbound is a cool thing, but 50% should be outbound prospecting, full focus prospecting. So as salespersons or salespeople, we're yes people. We're not used to saying no to people. Agreed, or is that something you recognize there?
Well, okay, so let's talk about that. So yes, I think the ordinary inclination is to be yes people, and we mm-hmm. want to be able to say yes. Having interviewed over 100 of the very best performing individual contributor sales professionals out mm-hmm. there, they are very good at saying no. The best salespeople are great at qualifying because they recognize the opportunity cost. They realize, so if you're going to, let's say you're in a competitive deal, and obviously the winner, there can only be one winner usually, right? So the winner is the winner. That's one thing. Second place, there is no such thing as second place really, right? Because everybody else lost. So I would argue second place was the first losing company that got out the fastest. And that's really what we're trying to do. It's like, look, if this is a good fit, then great. I want to make sure that I have the capacity to put my best energy into this. And I have the time and I have the bandwidth and I have the resources to really work on this particular deal. If it's not that, and I'm trying to push a rock up the hill, and at the end of the day, I'm probably going to get crushed by that rock as it rolls back over me, I should probably walk away so that I don't invest all of that time when I could be investing that time on a well-qualified opportunity that fits our ideal client profile.
Absolutely. So the two tips that you shared there is, you know, first of all, start looking at your lead scoring model, which we can dive into a little further. But, you know, the lead scoring model basically defines if a lead is handed over to sales at all. You know, is this someone that already should be qualified as a misfit based on its lead scoring model or a lead scoring score? The second one you shared there is just explain to a customer what a typical customer looks like. Just show them that this is not probably something you'll be able to solve. And as you refer to, you know, as you mentioned, people and prospects will love that approach. And I personally think, and I share that opinion with you as well, is that we spend too much time on leads that we already know won't buy, right?
Absolutely. So, absolutely. And why would you do that? Again, you're creating a bad experience. You're going to lose anyway. So you're just wasting time. And all of that time has a cost. You know, we pay these sales professionals a lot of money.
Absolutely. So you're a big process guy, right? So I listen to your podcast a lot. You know, I listen to the people you interview on the Sales Success Stories, but also on the Daily Sales Tips. You know, without a process, you're never going to be able to succeed as a sales professional. So where does qualifying fit into that process? How much time do you spend on it? How often do you do it? You know, how does that fit into your process?
Well, I think it is just like discovery. Mm-hmm. It's ongoing and all the time. So I did one of my favorite episodes very recently. It was episode 111 with Katie Jane Bailey. And she, one of the things she said early, this is the greatest quote ever. She said, discovery is a lifestyle, not a stage. And I think too often in our sales process, okay, you know, we've created this opportunity. We've had this introductory call. Now we go to discovery and it's this distinct thing. Well, discovery and qualification are things that should be happening the entire time. We should always be curious in every one of our conversations to continue to understand what's happening here. What are you trying to solve for? What's the challenge? What's changed? What's changing? Mm-hmm. You know, because nothing is static in these environments, right? The challenge isn't static. The organization isn't static. The marketplace isn't static. So we have to continue to be discovering through that process. And as we're discovering, we're also qualifying. So this sounded like a great fit early on with the information that we had in that first conversation. But now that we've started to have more conversations, maybe we learn more and we learn enough to go, wait, time out here. Mm-hmm. This sounds like it's changed. I thought this was a good fit based on this early information. I'm not sure that it is anymore. And really digging into that. And again, if it stopped being a good opportunity, let's get out and stop trying to push the rock up the hill.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's dive a little more into that lead scoring model, because maybe not all listeners are familiar to it, because we discuss a broad, you know, spectrum of all kinds of technologies in the marketing technology podcast. But Eloqua, all the marketing automation software platforms use lead scoring in one way or another. You know, some of them have multiple lead scoring models, or some of them, measure different stuff. But in a basic lead scoring model, what should be in there to be able to qualify a lead before it is handed over to sales?
Sure. And I'm going to talk about this from an Eloqua perspective, because that's what I'm most familiar with. So for those who aren't familiar, the Eloqua model is co-dynamic lead scoring, meaning there's two things that we're quantifying. On an A through D scale, we're quantifying how well somebody fits from a firmographic perspective. What industry are they in? What is their title? How much revenue does their company generate? What is their location? All those types of things will typically define, is this person and or is this company, but it's usually at an individual level, are they a good fit, A through D? Then we're looking from an engagement perspective, how engaged in our content are they? And that's on a scale of 1 through 4. So I think what most organizations do, and Eloqua allows you to have multiple scoring models. So kind of depending on how I'm looking at you in one particular view, maybe one team sees you as an A2 and another team, you're just not a good fit for them. They see you as a D2. Right. So that there's different ways that you can kind of set that up. I think too many organizations are just too loose and too easy. Like, again, the example client that I just shared without naming names is, if you've attended a webinar, you're going to go through the lead scoring model and we're going to convert that to a lead and have sales call you. Well, so the opportunity is, we need to, on the engagement model side of that, they might be okay on the firmographic side. They might have their personas and who's a good fit defined well. But on the engagement side, we may need to raise that bar way, way higher and really start to look for people that are exhibiting more consistent behaviors, not, oh, this person came to the website one time, they downloaded this white paper and we haven't seen them since. Or they attended this one webinar, but we didn't see any additional engagement afterwards. That's not a very good reason to pass somebody to sales. The other thing that I'll add to that is, traditionally, and this is starting to evolve and get kind of interesting, we have been looking at lead scoring on an individual basis. We're starting to get to a place where we can think about lead scoring at an account level. Mm-hmm. Because what we might start to see is, Scott is a C1. Scott is a marketing manager. So I don't really have much authority. I don't really fit the typical buyer persona, but Scott's a 1 because he's engaging really heavily. Okay. But I might have interaction very broadly across that organization. So if I've got 10 different people in the same marketing organization, in the same account, engaging with different content, looking at our stuff, we should probably let sales know, hey, something is going on in Scott's organization. Y'all need to reach out and figure out what's going on in there. And there's a great opportunity to do some outbound and work on having some conversations and just understand, like, what is driving all of this engagement across a large set of people.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying there about lead scoring, just to basically define that a little further, is that there is two aspects to it. First of all, you're talking about profile data. So that could be stuff that's coming from your database or people fill out in forms. So, you know, name, address, industry, function, etc. So all kinds of job titles, that's the profile data. And you're combining that with behavioral or engagement data, right?
Exactly.
So and that we've seen that in the other automation platforms as well. One thing that I might add there, if you're talking specifically about webinars, just to make that example a little bit clearer, is that you could, based on people subscribing to a webinar, you know, get a lot of profile data. You know, they fill out a form to subscribe to a webinar, so you know their job function, etc. You might add the behavioral data of people, you know, say performing stuff during the webinar. Let's say you're doing a log me in or a go to webinar webinar, and you're doing a poll during that webinar. You could, based on the answers, you could score those leads differently, right?
Yep, exactly. That was exactly the answer I was going to give, like, talk about as we go a little bit deeper into sophistication. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. So somebody who registered for a webinar, sat on it for 5 minutes and went away is totally different from here's somebody that's really well qualified. They were very engaged. We asked three different poll questions and those poll questions actually matched very well. And we essentially have decided that they're qualified at that stage. Perfect. It may make sense to now send that over to sales based on that one interaction, but we've gone deeper and we understand more about them and we've done the work to figure out if they're a good fit or not.
So based on the answer that people give during a poll that you have in the webinar, yes or no. So let's say you're doing a webinar about marketing automation, just for the sake of having a topic here. But let's say you're having a webinar on marketing automation. A question could be, do you have a system in place? Yes, no. And based on the no, or maybe no, but we plan to within the couple of next 6 months or something. If that's the answer, that could be a lead score that goes probably through the roof, because that's yes, 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 yes. But if someone says, no, we already have one, but we're using a different system and we have just decided or started using that a year ago, you're probably giving less points to that lead.
Exactly. Yep.
Cool. Have you seen that in practice already?
Oh, absolutely.
It's all nice and all in theory, but we've seen it in practice as well. And what are your experiences there? How do you know, because the qualification process goes up, so can you share something on numbers or maybe some results that you've seen or experiences from salespeople that have followed up on those leads?
Well, yeah. So I think the most important thing is, in addition to passing over the lead, you need to pass over the context. So What should happen in that scenario is, Elias was on this webinar. Here's how he answered those questions. That now comes to me for me to follow up on. I shouldn't just blindly be calling you at that point. I should have access to the ways that you answered so that we can really start the conversation from there. Right, I can reach out and say, hey, Elias, I know you joined this webinar and I was looking at the way that you were interacting and it sounds like this is kind of your situation. This is typically the way that we're working with our clients. Is that something that we might be able to help you with, right? So just contextualizing that, because if you only use it for qualification and you don't provide the context, that's a really hard conversation for the salesperson to have, because they're just guessing. They have no freaking idea. And it makes the customer feel like, you don't know me. I just told you this.
Yep. Absolutely.
So it's making sure that they have all the information and they have all the understanding. And like, no, don't explain something to me that I just spent 30 minutes learning about. Like, let's assume that I was paying attention and I took that part away. Let's extend and continue the conversation from there. Let's not start over, because then you're just driving me crazy and you guys look incompetent.
So that basically what you're saying here is that it's absolutely a necessity to have your CRM system, because that's what the SDR is using in practice, connected to your marketing automation system.
Correct.
What kind of data do you share within the CRM system then? Because you don't want all that data in it, right?
Well, so you can get a lot of it in there. And again, in the case of Eloqua, you have tools like Profiler that are going to give you that deeper dive view, and it allows me to kind of drill down. So I can see your engagement over time and what types of assets you were engaging with. So maybe we sent you an email. Great. How did you open that email? What did you click on? What pages on our website have you been on? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is actually the way. I've got a great story here. The way that I was introduced to Eloqua, I was working for another startup. So my first IPO, I worked for a company called Bizarre Voice. Mm-hmm. And I had been, and we were an Eloqua user, I had been to see a pretty significant kind of conglomerate type of a brand in the New York City area. And this is a pretty high level meeting. We'd met with an executive. I had actually taken our co-founder with me on that trip. So it was a pretty high profile meeting. Went great. I mean, it was just a really productive meeting. We thought we had some good place to go from there. And then I got back to the office and they just went completely dark on me for a long time, a few months. Mm-hmm. And one morning, And I think it was a Monday morning because the activity had happened over the weekend. I come into the office first thing Monday morning, and I have all of these alerts from Eloqua that this particular executive who we'd met with had spent like an hour and a half on the website. And I was able to see and know, oh, here's the pages that he was looking at. And this is so far, this is so long ago that people didn't know about this technology. So I just picked up the phone and called him and happened to get through. And his comment was, wow, that's so weird. I was just thinking about you guys. To which, and of course, we had this conversation early in the Eloqua days. We always would talk about, we want purchase orders, not restraining orders, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful and nuanced about the way that you're using this data. But for me, I was holding all the cards. I knew exactly what he was looking at, but my response to, oh, that's funny, I was just thinking about you, is I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. Well, it seems like the timing was good. What were you thinking about? But I already knew. So I knew what the things that I was going to need to respond to in that conversation. So I just seemed so much smarter than I ordinarily am in that conversation because I had all of that context.
Absolutely. So, and that's, I recognize a lot in that because, you know, even though people nowadays probably, you know that this stuff is possible.
Yeah.
You know, when we demo this to CMOs or I would say even the reaction from salespeople is even better there because, you know, they don't seem to, let's say, have seen it before. They know that it's possible, but they can't imagine that it's possible for them as well. So if they see it, they believe it and they want to have it. I do want to dive a little into something you said there because, you know, you said I reached out to that guy that was probably 10, 12 years ago in the early days of Eloqua. Nowadays, especially during COVID times, it's hard to get hold of people by phone, right? So you need mm-hmm. to find ways of efficiently and maybe or in a new way approach prospects. So you get handed over that lead from marketing. It's pushed into your CRM system. Then you need to reach out to them. And that's not always the phone anymore. You know, it's of course you should use that phone, but you know, people work from home. It's hard to get telephone numbers. It's hard to get hold of people anyway. So you need to have new ways of reaching out to them. Could be email, could be social, but there's also other ways of sales technology tools that you could use there. And you share a lot of those within your podcast. And maybe you would like to share some of the, let's say prospecting. It would say almost prospecting technology tools that you could use as an SDR there.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so I'll talk through some of the things that I use. And one of the things maybe we can put into your show notes, my favorite webinar that I've done maybe ever, I did a session on five creative prospecting, things. I don't remember what my adjective mm-hmm. was there that worked in the real world. And, yeah. And it's all videos. It's super fun because they're just real examples of people being creative and doing different stuff and using video and using direct mail and all of these other types of channels from a tooling perspective. And I live in kind of two different worlds. So I think for this, let me talk about the sales success land that I live in, because in that world, you know, it's just a little side hustle. Eloqua is not the right tool for me. So I use HubSpot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a much better fit for the work that I do. So let's talk about three things. Let's talk about LinkedIn. Let's talk about HubSpot. Let's talk about Vidyard. So LinkedIn to me is one of the most powerful tools in my personal tech stack for everything that I do, because almost everybody that I'm engaging with, and part of this is I think the nature of my industry, right? All of the people that I'm interacting with are in sales or marketing, and those folks are almost always on LinkedIn. So I'm able to just learn about them and quickly understand what are the things that they care about? What are they talking about? What groups are they a part of? Who do we know in common? Right? I mean, there's just so many great clues and hints about who they are and what's important to them that's going to help me connect. So that to me is just a fundamental foundational tool to the way that I do research. I don't talk to anybody without looking at their LinkedIn profile. And if they don't have one, I'm like, what is wrong with this person? Right? So that's kind of step one. And it's also a channel. So if I find somebody that is active on LinkedIn, they're posting a lot, I've got an opportunity to engage with them where they are. You know, let me comment on some of their posts and share some insights and start to get onto their radar in a productive way. I can also use the messaging and those types of things. From a HubSpot perspective, kind of the same thing in just understanding the people in the sales world, how they're engaging with my content, right? And they've got some nice plugins that go into my Gmail. And so I can understand when they're opening my emails. I mean, just very simple types of things. But again, it gives me just a more of an understanding of when are they engaging? What might be a good time to reach out? Obviously, now I'm taking advantage of the email channel. One of the things I try and do a lot, hard to do before you've interacted with somebody the first time, but I like to ask if I can, how they prefer to communicate, because we all have different styles. Some people like the phone. Some people don't like the phone. Some people prefer email. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge email guy. If you want to reach out to me, send me an email to scott@top1.fm. You're going to hear back from me. Don't call me. I won't answer the phone. If the number's not recognized, you know, I mean, that's just kind of my own preference. You know, LinkedIn's fine too, but the LinkedIn inbox is a bit of a, it's really difficult to manage. So it's better if you just send me a regular email. I think the more that you understand that about the people that you're engaging with, it becomes easier to then reconnect and follow up. And again, thinking beyond those channels and using text is a fantastic channel. I can't use a lot of the tricks that I used to use, where I'd open up the text conversation, because the way I used to do it was, Elias, you and I have scheduled a meeting. I'm going to come see you, mm-hmm. you know, when we used to travel and do those types of things. And I would say, hey, you know, I'd love to have your mobile number just so we can confirm in the day of if anything comes up that we've got sort of a direct channel with each other. Uh-huh. And everybody's willing to do that. And now I've opened up yet another way that I can communicate. And then the last piece is, and I've been obsessed with this tool for years, and it's, I was worried in the early days that it would just get bastardized and be kind of a flash in the pan type of thing, but Vidyard and uh-huh. using video in email. And the reason I love it so much is precisely because it doesn't scale. So I can send a billion people a generic email message. But you can't technically, but for the most part, you can't do that with a video message. And I think that's meaningful, right? It sort of shows, look, I spent it's not an extraordinary amount of time. I took 20 seconds to look at your LinkedIn profile, find something interesting and relevant about you. And now I'm going to record a short video so that you can see my face, you can hear my passion, you can hear me speak to you about what you care about. And most people don't see those very often, right? Even if you're familiar with that approach, mm-hmm. it's still pretty novel when it happens. I actually think the same thing about direct mail. That channel is so overlooked these days. And again, I often will put myself in the perspective of the recipient. And if you think about these channels and you think about the messages, how many emails does somebody get in the average day? It's probably a lot. How many phone calls and voicemails and things do they get? Hopefully not as many, because that would be horrible, but it's probably still a pretty good number. How many videos do they get in email? That probably stands out. That's probably rare. And when was the last time they got a handwritten note in the mail? You know, just something simple. And I think those things become very memorable and unique and just differentiated because they're so uncommon.
Because they don't scale, as you said. You know,
that's it.
That's you know, the other day we had an interview on the Marketing Technology Podcast with the CEO of handwritten.com with a, that's written with a Y, handwritten. So, and they do scale handwritten notes. It plugs into your HubSpot, you know, and that's absolutely, so that's a nice thing for you to probably consider, you know, it's enables you to directly from your HubSpot or Salesforce, write a handwritten note, which is delivered by normal mail to your prospect or also to your clients, of course, from a service perspective or maybe an upsell perspective. I love that video, Vidyard, example that you gave there, because I have started using that after listening to your podcast, to be honest. And, you know, you may call us a little, let's say, slow or behind in Europe. You know, we're not as fast as you guys in the US, but, you know, we've started a video probably a year later than you guys. And it's even less common here in Europe to use it. So I've had enormous, let's say, positive responses to those emails, which I shared with you on the Sales Success Tips, which is still have to come out probably, but we have seen enormous success in those videos. And, you know, people, also existing customers for upsells and prospects for new business, of course, you know, they use those videos, but they also send them through within their organization. So you see a complete DMU yes. is looking at your videos, right? So, and you're not that, let's say, fast and slick sales guy that you might be on the picture. You know, you're a real person. We can hear the energy and the passion in your voice. So they share that. And, you know, we also use it and advise customers to use those videos within proposals that they send. You know, if you're sending out a proposal, include a video, you know, explain that proposal, give some feedback on why you build it that way, because we all know that, you know, you have a lot of passion. We all have that passion as salespeople in those, let's say, discovery calls where you talk a lot with a prospect about what could work for them, what it could deliver them, et cetera. And then you have to send that that PDF. Or maybe you're still sending a written proposal or, you know, some digital form of proposal. But, you know, that's not as exciting as the talk that you had, the discovery call or the, let's say, initial call with the customer. And you can, let's say, keep that engagement there when you include that video. And video is easy to use, right?
Yeah. So I just did a bonus episode with Tyler Lessard, who is the VP of marketing at Vidyard. And, you know, they just did a recent award ceremony. So they captured a whole bunch of brand new best practices and ideas and everything else. And, you know, it's so while the creation of the video and doing it for a lot of different people doesn't scale, but one of the things that he mentioned, he was talking about the story of an individual who uses video quite extensively. And he was saying, you know, he had maybe sent videos to 100 different individuals, but in the stats behind the scenes, he could see that 500 unique Absolutely. Individuals had watched his videos. So it actually, it's not scalable on the front end, but it's infinitely scalable on the back end, because what people aren't going to do is rewatch the entire recording of your Zoom meeting that you had. That's not happening.
Nope.
But if you can encapsulate the most important idea from that meeting in a minute and send it in an email in that video, that's going to get forwarded around. And now that sales rep's face and him and his excitement and that idea have now spread throughout the organization to people he didn't even know were part of the buying team.
Correct. And then, you know, we've actually, so I can share some results here, but we have seen an increase in 18% in proposals that were accepted after starting to use video within proposals. So that's almost 20% over the last year.
That's fantastic. That's a great stat.
It is absolutely amazing. And I don't understand why people don't use it more, because it's so easy to use. You know, we are all since COVID, you know, one of the positive parts of that is that we've started using video more often. So start using it within your sales cycle as well. You know, within prospecting, within sending the proposal, follow up, etc. You know, it's super easy. And it's, you know, it's so the ROI is probably a day or something. You know, it's Vidyard is like $200 or $180 a year or something. It's super cheap to for what you're getting. So it's worth that money. You know, you're earning that back in a day.
Well, it's free to start. So actually, if you go to top1.fm/V, that'll take you directly to their free Chrome plugin. And they have way, way too much stuff in their free version. I find that most people don't even need to pay for it. There's so much that you could do with that. And a lot of the conversation I had with Tyler was about, it doesn't need to be perfect. You know, just start, just be human. If you flub, you know, we talked about being a one take wonder, like, you know, if you stumble over your words, like I just did it, that's fine. If it humanizes you, it's real, right? Yeah. Instead of being this super scripted, perfect thing. Don't even worry about that.
No, I love it. I love it. So thank you very much, Scott, for those insights about, you know, how to, prospect, how to qualify, how to say no to misfits, and also that those insights on your own MarTech stack. Is there something as a last thing that you would like to share with our listeners?
Oh, you'd have to give me a direction. I have a thousand things I'm sure I could share.
Well, basically the direction that I could give you here, because we have a lot of marketers listening to the MarTech, the Marketing Technology Podcast, of course. So it's CMOs, etc. So maybe a tip on sales and marketing alignment, so if you want to call it that way.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great framing. I think you build empathy through not just interaction and conversation, but kind of shared experience. I would say if you're a marketer, there's no such thing as talking to your customers too often, right? And just getting that direct understanding of what's going on with them, what their perceptions are, and just what's going on in their world. And if you can you be an SDR for a day? Like have that experience, like put yourself in a situation where you're looking at the leads, where you're calling the leads, where you're having the conversations. If you can experience that, it's going to make you so much better in being able to serve the sales organization and deliver value to them. And there one other thing I'll drop, because it feels super relevant and it's a big topic and we just don't have time to get there, is thinking beyond leads as your metric and thinking about opportunity creation and thinking about revenue. And there's a whole conversation inside of that around all of your conversions along the way. How can we improve each of those conversions to make sure that more revenue is coming out the bottom of the funnel based on what we're putting in the top?
Yeah, absolutely. That's some great advice there, to be focusing on revenue marketing rather than, let's say, delivering as many leads as possible. You know, that's this revenue marketing, we're all involved, sales and marketing, and that should be a top focus. Thank you very much for those insights, Scott. And I'll share your contact details. So the email address you already mentioned, scott@top1.fm. But I'll also share your LinkedIn profile and a link to your website. And I'm looking forward to visiting and seeing you in October on the Sales Success Summit in Austin.
We'll see you there. I can't wait.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Also, if you want to be a guest or know someone that should be a guest to our show, shoot me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you for listening.